Adam's got some questions.
Well, I had one on the subject of the Hebraic roots of the Bible, and of course, you know, I mean, in the same way, I came from a first church I attended after I got saved, was an Anglican church, and I found, you know, listening to what they were saying and reading the Bible, you know, after a while, it kind of rubs off on you, and you kind of, I think, in the UK, a lot of UK churches, so they've tried to, I suppose, anglify Jesus, and especially Paul. They've really tried to anglify him, you know, and they don't really talk about his Jewish background so much. They try to keep away from that, and they see it as in a sort of a negative sense rather than it being something that's very much a part of his identity and part of Jesus' identity, especially. So, I mean, I suppose for, you know, my generation, we tend to be quite visual. Are there any kind of visual aids or other things that can help us read the Gospels, for instance, with that kind of Jewish mindset? I mean, obviously, the New Man Bible seems very helpful, but are there any, sometimes, you know, I'm reading and I'm thinking, I wish I knew what this looked like, you know, or what this is, this kind of...
Like there's a lot of time in something that I must admit, I sort of struggle with it a little bit. He always focuses... This is the bill. He focuses on any time there's like clothing shawl. It's always a prayer shawl. The talit is the Hebrew word.
Talit, yeah.
Talit
or talus, we called it.
Yeah. And it's all you know. You always see. It's always the visual is you see Jesus wearing it, or you know the woman who touches him is touching the tassels and this. And it's like any time there's anything like a shawl mentioned, it seems to me, I haven't read it all, but it seems like it's always the prayer shawl.
Yeah.
And I almost struggle with that a little bit. Yeah. It's like, is it really? Is it really?
No way, no, because you're going from a Greek word that perhaps could mean one thing or another. So there's always going to be an assumption made in any translation. And obviously, as I said, because his background, because he's doing it from a Hebraic background, he's always going to... over Hebraicize it perhaps in some cases.
Because you have the visual, like I know that there's some pamphlets that Christian Friends of Israel, is it Derek White, people have written about what Jesus would have worn, and they say he would have worn the phylactery, and it's like, oh really, I don't know, would he?
I don't know about that.
But there are sort of, you know, you might not agree or feel.
I was reading this morning, Joseph's it's not a coat of many colours, long tunic, which they say is the basis of the prayer shawl.
Yeah, so I've got that as well, so, which means...
Where do the colours come from?
Yeah, someone should tell Andrew Lloyd Webber about this. He's written the whole stage paper.
Wasn't it something about a bright colour or a rich colour or something?
No, just to answer your question, he says it comes from the Septuagint and from the Latin Vulgate. That's the many colours is in those. Yeah. It's not actually in Septuagint. Sorry, I was close.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't speak. I have trouble with English.
Septuagint.
What did I say?
But going back to Adam's question, the thing about the Hebrew language is as Kate said, it's very action orientated. It doesn't actually stress too much about descriptions. So if you read the Old Testament, we don't, apart from knowing that David was young and Goliath was big, there's not many descriptions in it. That's why, you know, there's no description of Jesus, for instance. Probably in any other literature from a different mindset, there'll be flowery descriptions of what people look like and what they did. But no, I mean, the Bible has always, it's been written to encourage us to think in a certain way and to do things. And so there's a lot of conversation, there's a lot of action. And this Bible really brings out the action stuff, but there's very little description, apart from like prophecy, you know, which you have to reinterpret in certain ways. So sometimes you have to fill in the gaps, and you have to use other literature about, you know, what Jews looked like in those days. So you have to sort of go outside the Bible in some cases to really get a visual thing. But the problem is we've got 2,000 years of indoctrination from Leonardo da Vinci, etc., about, you know, how Jesus looked, how Paul looked, and we have to, in your mental image, you're thinking of the Last Supper, perhaps, when you're thinking of Jesus, and you have to sort of deprogram yourself. Mm. And so I'm not sure how we reprogram, you know, people to think visually in a Hebraic sense, because it's...
You have to make an effort.
Yeah.
You have to make an effort. Or obviously, wherever there is a description, then, you know, you don't skim over it. It's a bit like, you know, when you talk about the preparation of the tabernacle, all the objects and things like that. And, you know, when we were down in Cornwall at Creation Fest, and there was a creation stand, and they had a model, it's a fantastic model of what the Ark, Noah's Ark, looked like. So I took some photographs of
the
it,
box.
And it was like a big box, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I was picking up a children's Bible story book from the other stand, and you know, you saw this little boat with a giraffe head, and you said, "Oh, do I buy that, or do I want my grandson to get a really, from the very start, a true picture?"
But I did a good Google image search on Noah's Ark, and you don't see any of the boxes. It's always the traditional.
But the dimensions are there, aren't they? In the Bible, were given.
Answers Genesis. Ken Ham, he's his big sort of centre.
Yeah,
they're building one at the moment, according to the old
An ark
design. Yeah.
All right.
Noah's Ark. Is that in the US?
No, it's in America.
In America. Oh yes.
Where is it?
Colorado.
Colorado,
isn't it?
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Is it going to be full scale?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
I'm hoping to do.
And how long it will take to build? Is it just one person building it?
Did God tell it? Is there something we should know?
Yeah.
If there's a sudden movement of animals, like two cats up the road, we know something's happening.
The rainbow.
Absolutely. But going back to like visual things, Steve's right that we have had all this programming of, I mean, we take in visual things all the time. Don't we, from a very young age, our brain's just taking in visual things.
Plus, they're a very visual generation, isn't it?
So much fun to do. But resources, there are so many resources out there. Mm-hmm. There are plenty. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the CFI resources are amazing. Also,
Genesis,
I love Bridges for Peace. Their monthly letter that comes through have a lot of pictures in the articles, don't they?
And Creation Research, John Mackay is excellent as well.
So it's thinking of those ministries who focus on that and have a look at their websites, have a look at their materials.
Also, something of interest that we'll talk about next time is the new series that's coming out, the Bible, on Channel 5. Because obviously that's going to be very visual. Is it Hollywood? I don't know.
So what is it?
It's the Bible. it's
dramatisation of
It's a big budget thing in America that's coming over. Obviously, it can't be that good, Channel 5 are putting it on.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they've cancelled it. Because,
possibly. But
prejudices.
Yeah, but again, it's a lot of reading between the lines. Because it's visual, and because the Bible isn't visual, they're going to add things from their own imagination to fill in the gaps.
So who's and it'll be interesting.
I don't know. No, for me,
Irish. Producer, it's actually a husband and wife couple. I can't remember her name though.
Roma Downey,
that's it. Yeah, and they've got like Hans Zimmer doing the score, and it's very kind of big blockbuster style.
How long's the series going for?
Like, forever,
like 6 years.
Is it like a 10-part series or something?
10-part mini series.
It's fairly soon, December.
Yeah, it says here, watch the Bible series highlights on Channel 5 this December.
Yeah, well, someone I think mentioned about Barack Obama's policies earlier. Well, they've gotten into real trouble with this, because apparently during Jesus' temptation in the wilderness, the depiction, talking of visual things, they've got the devil. I mean, the guy looks almost like a twin of Barack Obama. I mean, he looks just like him. It's ridiculous.
Who's it?
The devil.
The person that they've got to play the devil, or the makeup, whatever they use, is a big controversy in the States, because it's uncanny resemblance. It looks a lot like Barack Obama.
That's really bad.
It is.
So they've got to change it to look like David Cameron for us.
It says here it's called The Bible, and it's a series, it's a 5-part programme that dramatises some of the most famous stories ever written and some of the most iconic characters from Noah's Ark, the Exodus, Daniel in the Lion's Den, the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus.
Mm. that's interesting.
Originally aired in the US on the History Channel.
But just going back to the Mel Gibson thing, the Passion of the Christ, because I had to write a report a bit on behalf of Revelation TV, I think, in those days. So I went there to one of the screenings, the media screenings, and it's awful. I walked out.
Really?
Yeah. Because there was a subtext there, and because now we know Mel Gibson, let's say, is not exactly very positive towards Jewish people, and he's actually said it in a drunken stupor once, and thing that I hate Jews.
His father's a Holocaust designer.
Yeah, designer. That's even worse. <He's really good. laughs> But there's an anti-Jewish subtext for that. I can't remember all the exact. I actually wrote an article. I can't remember what I wrote, but there were bits like. When the devil was speaking, he was always siding with the Jewish people, like the crowds, and rather than the Romans. Little subtle things, and there's just so much subtle anti-Jewish sentiment all the way through it. And the Jewish community saw it and hated it. And basically the Christians were so intent to use it for evangelism that they decided it doesn't matter if we're angering the Jews, because God will want this for evangelism. So in other words, they got totally the wrong end, because the Jewish community have never forgotten that. And as for evangelism purposes, you know, it did nothing. And it just stoked up controversy for other reasons as well. So, you know, let's just say, you know, we have to really watch what Hollywood throws at us visually. And sometimes things should just be... I've just seen the devil. It's a split screen picture on one on the website.
Which one's which?
I can't tell. I don't know what the devil normally
looks like. It's not quite that bad.
We're just having a look at a picture on Phil's phone. Yeah.
I'm surprised they would cast.
So which one's Obama, the one on the left or the right?
Yeah, that's a real stereotype, isn't it?
Well, you know when you read like old Christian books and you think, oh, this is amazing, and then you come across something and you go, oh, I can't believe you just said that, that's awful. Stuff, some of the stuff, like so for example, Spurgeon does like a 15-minute preach on why it's fine to smoke cigars and how he loves it and how he smokes one during every when he writes every sermon, and how, you know, they're a gift of God. Now we're going to go, really? But then the worst one was definitely, you know, what's the book? Pilgrim's Progress, and the devil is pictured as someone who is black, and you just sit there and go, Bunyan dropped the ball on that one. That's the danger of the culture, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm sure 200 years' time, we'll look back on people will look back on Christian Day and go, I can't believe you said that.
But that is true on absolutely everything. Everything we see is a product of the culture in which we live. And people are going to look back at some of the politically correct rubbish that we're coming out with now. In the future, they're going to say, what's that all about? It's every culture that's different. So what do we do about this? How do we get authenticity back into our Christian life? You know, basically, you know, there's one thing communicating with Christians. What about non-believers who have a very negative feeling about Christians? You know, and there's this survey we just had a look at, how, you know, what a low percentage of this country is now Christian. I can't remember the exact thing, but it's like dropped by half in the last 10 years. Because part of it is through the bad witness of Christians and the way that they're depicted, the way they act.
Plus also that really aggressive atheism, which has really grown in the last 10 years.
True, but some of that has shot itself in the foot. I would have thought that Richard Dawkins, even with other atheists...
Oh, a lot of atheists think he's a nutcase.
Yeah, yeah.
At least they get one thing right.
Yeah. Oh, we just named a name. Oh, lawsuit on its way.
Believe in, yeah?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. So
I got thrown off of one site, actually, one atheist site, which I was a regular visitor on.
Hold on, let's put it in context. Howard is a Facebook evangelist.
And it was fine for several months, and then they were pushing the God delusion, and I just said, the Dawkins delusion is a much better read. That was it. End of. Thrown off. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Well done.
Did you say something? You had friends from 40 years who've now...
I've had several friends from years ago that have contacted me on Facebook and have ended up having very strong arguments. yes, one unfacebooked me. I'd known him for 40 years. I hadn't seen him for years, but he decided to catch up with me, and then we started talking. He was a virulent anti-Zionist. His father was a British soldier in Palestine. And so his view has obviously been coloured by all of that era.
Jewish anti-Semite that you've heard?
Oh, that's another one, Jewish anti-Semite. He's a sax player from the Blockheads, you know, Ian Dury's old band.
Oh, right.
And he's a virulent anti-Semite. He's Jewish, Israeli Jewish. And he's
yeah, it's a lot like that.
Yeah.
But then there's a distinction between anti-Semite and anti-Israel. There's a lot of Jewish.
Well, he's an anti-Semite.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I mean, talking about, you know, burning down synagogues is not such a bad idea, things like that, you know.
Wow. That's a bit bold.
He's very highly thought of as a sax player in the jazz world.
We won't name names.
We won't name names.
But I told him, actually, oh, this is... You're what they call an unorthodox Jew. You're a Nazi. I didn't hear anything else from him after that.
That's telling him straight.
It is, really.
Didn't some of the Nazis have secretly have Jewish blood?
Right,
one or two of them. I can't remember which ones.
Sure, they didn't want to own up to
it. No, absolutely. It only came out afterwards, I think, in some cases. I think Hitler was one of them.
He feared that. He did fear
there
that.
There was a
possibility. There was a very vague tale about his great-grandmother or something. They owned a farm, and they had a girl that worked for them, and there was a suspected pregnancy from their son. And this, but it was never proven on anything anyway, but it's something he feared.
Makes a good story.
Yeah. Mr. Hilter.
Kate Middleton's half Jewish, isn't she?
Yeah.
So the royal family.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
One of those a few of it.
Yeah.
She a goldsmith?
That's right, Justin Welby's half Jewish.
Yeah.
And what's her name? Simon
Cowell.
Bonham Carter. She's part Jewish as well.
Simon Cowell's got a Jewish mother.
Who has?
Simon Cowell.
Really?
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Right. It's ready today.
Sounds so true.
That's true, yeah.
That was another virulent anti-Christian. Stephen Fry,
yeah.
So it's interesting what you were saying about the percentage of people who are, you know, Christian and the survey. I was just having a look on this information about the series on Channel 5, and the guy that's produced it said that he was inspired to create the show because of a growing biblical illiteracy among young people. Wanted to attract a new generation of viewers.
Yeah, but would that turn them to the Bible? Would they equate that with the book? I don't know. Would it start them? Or would they group it up with everything?
A small percentage. Because you get a few clues from it, maybe.
It's just that when you see something like...
Turn a whole generation.
Well, it's not as if schools get assemblies anymore or any other input.
It's just that when you see something on television, on the film, that seems to be fantasy, then it they're seen as acts of fiction, works of fiction.
Oh, it depends how it's presented. I mean, if they haven't lost touch with the Bible that much.
People flying through the sky. Yeah. If they do it accurately, it should be better than
hopefully.
Nothing.
It's interesting because I know a Muslim girl who doesn't really read the Quran. It's not seen as important to her. I'll leave it to the leaders or she doesn't, she thinks she knows Arabic, but she doesn't, you know, doesn't understand it all. And I think, you know, I don't want to be like that, you know, as Christians. It's fundamental that we know the scriptures. So to me, my response is like, wow, that can not only be a good thing, but it must be, obviously we don't know how it's going to be presented, but it's a positive thing if it can get across the message that this is what it's about, you know. It's not just five pillars that we pray through or whatever it is, you know, the whole word is... fundamental.
You know, but what happens if if their agenda is, say, a liberal agenda, the writers, and that Noah's Ark comes to something that is can be naturalistic rather than miraculous? I don't know. I mean,
it'll be so interesting to see how they do
yeah.
how they do the things that we take to be needing to be literal.
Yeah.
yeah,
and worldwide flood, and or you know,
yeah,
God speaking directly to an individual. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it will be interesting.
Represent it as well.
Says here resources for the series produced by the Damaris Trust. Now that rings a bell. Who are Damaris Trust? We know them.
They're very liberal in this country. Right. Now, but that they've nothing to do with the film.
Oh, right.
They've just commented it. They're just English commentators. Yeah.
Okay. Oh well. Have to watch it and see. Like we have to watch all these things that are brought in.
Well, let's watch it and then at our next Saffron Planet, we'll talk about it.
In December.
In December. Watch it. Probably leading up to Christmas.
Yeah, we'll do that. That'd be interesting. Okay.